Glad I was paying attention that day in divinity. Long passage with names like Pharpar and Aram and Naaman. Ask your liturgist to read them instead of you doing it. Thanks, Nan, for being a good sport. Listen now to the Gospel of Jesus Christ according to Luke. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 men with a skin disease approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? So where are the other 9? Did none of them return to give glory to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." This is the good news. People ask me all the time whether I like living here in Utah, and I do. One of the things I like the most about living here in Utah is that there's not much as much poison ivy here as there's been in other places I've lived. This might sound like a strange thing to say, but I am highly susceptible to the unspeakable evil that this plant inflicts. I was generally good for 3 cases a year back in Ohio, where I'm pretty sure poison ivy is the state flower. And if it's not, it should be. The bout of poison ivy I had during August of 2019 was particularly awful. It was so bad, in fact, that I ended up at urgent care late one night because the rash had spread over my entire left leg below the knee, causing my ankle to swell up to twice its normal size. It looked really, really gross. Thankfully, I was on vacation for the worst of it, though it didn't make for much of a vacation. And since it was summer, I could wear shorts around the clock. This was good because walking around in long pants all day in that heat and humidity would have been excruciating. The downside of wearing shorts, however, was that everyone could see my grotesque lower leg. During that particular case of poison ivy, I found myself feeling really self-conscious. I noticed that people would glance at me, specifically my leg, and then quickly turn away. They were hardly able to conceal their troubled expressions, which were generally a mixture of disgust and fear. At some level, I kind of understood their reactions. Like I said, my leg was really gross. And being kind of a germ freak myself, I appreciated their concern. They must have been worried that they'd catch whatever I had. They had no way of knowing that my affliction wasn't contagious. I mean, I wasn't walking around wearing a t-shirt that said, "Don't worry, it's just poison ivy." That probably would have been a good idea, though. So I remember sitting in the waiting room at urgent care that night and being miserable, not only because my left leg felt like it was on fire, but also because I felt like an outcast, like a pariah. As I looked around, it seemed as though the other patients had created a multi-seat buffer zone between me and them so as not to risk coming in contact with the bearer of this horrible pestilence I had. And this, as the saying goes, added insult to injury. I'd never experienced anything like that before, and I hope never to do so again. It was absolutely awful. I kept telling myself that I'd probably never see any of these people again, which was true. Kept telling myself that my poison ivy would eventually go away, which was also true. But what do you think those 10 lepers in today's story from Luke's gospel might have been telling themselves? Just for the record, they probably didn't have leprosy, what's known today as Hansen's disease. Way back in Jesus' day, leprosy was used to describe any number of terrible skin conditions, and Hansen's disease was pretty rare in that part of the world back then. That wouldn't have been much consolation to these folks. Whatever they had was apparently not something they could simply cover up and hide, because if they could have done so, then they probably would have done so. Their illness was one that people could always readily see, maybe on their hands, or perhaps literally written all over their faces. It also likely wasn't an affliction that was just going to go away on its own. And there weren't an awful lot of dermatologists dispensing antibiotics and hydrocortisone at that time. Heck, in our day and age, even Hansen's disease is pretty easily cured. Back then, not so much. Absent some kind of miracle, these 10 people were going to have to endure their disease for a while, perhaps even for the rest of their lives. I'm sure they got some really judgmental looks out there on the mean streets of Israel, as the people they passed by every single day steered clear of them for fear of catching whatever they had. But the social implications of their disease were greater than that. Because they would have been seen as ritually unclean, they would have been banished from the temple. They would have been unable to participate in the basic practices of their faith. They would have been effectively removed from their community. Alone, abandoned, and desperate, these 10 folks were left to live on their own in the barren region between Samaria and Galilee, literally in the middle of nowhere. And this is where they find Jesus, who's passing through on his way to Jerusalem. When they hear that Jesus is coming near, they approach him, but keep their distance. By this point, they'd grown accustomed to keeping their distance from people. They shout out to him, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." They want mercy, they want a cure, and they want it now. Can't really blame them for that. And so Jesus cures them, no questions asked, as Luke describes it. When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were made clean. They're free to walk into the temple once again to rejoin the society that had shunned them. Well, most of them are, anyway. You see, as 9 of the 10 head off to Jerusalem, 1 remains. Luke tells us that when he saw that he was healed, he turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Now, the fact that the Samaritan is the only one who returns to thank Jesus would have been really provocative to Luke's first audience. Remember, for them, Samaritans were understood to be the absolute worst people on earth. Sermons on this text tend to focus on the Samaritan's gratitude for the mercy Jesus shows him. That's fine. The Samaritan, the foreigner, the very last person that Luke's readers would have believed could do the right thing, did the right thing. He paused to give thanks to God for his miraculous healing, while the others take off for Jerusalem. The message in this case is pretty obvious. Go and do likewise. Be like the Samaritan, not like those guys. Yeah, okay. But today I want to linger there with the Samaritan for a bit, in part because the 9 others were no longer willing to do so. Yeah, he was perfectly fine for them to hang around with when they were all lepers, despised by the rest of the world, when no one else wanted to be around any of them. Things were different now. It's funny how fickle we humans can be. Come to think of it, it's not really all that funny at all. I say this because when Jesus tells them all to go and show themselves to the priest, the Samaritan can't do that with the others because as a Samaritan, he wasn't welcome in their temple. Sure, it wasn't like it had been when they'd all had their skin disease, when what made them different from others and brought them all together was manifestly obvious. People couldn't tell just by looking at the Samaritan that he wasn't like the rest. And I doubt that he was wearing a t-shirt that said, "Kiss me, I'm a Samaritan," or anything like that. But the fact of the matter was that he could no longer be with those who were just moments early his brethren because of something else about him that set him apart and thus excluded him. Suddenly, he was no longer welcome among those by whom he was accepted. Man, that had to hurt. Our constant need to perceive difference among us and to use it as a means of keeping us apart is an insidious thing. I dare say it's our greatest sin. Why must we classify and categorize one another and even ourselves so ruthlessly and mercilessly? Jesus, Master, have mercy on us, the 10 lepers cried when they saw Jesus. Mercy. Evolved into such a loaded word. As theologian Marcus Borg explains it, these days, mercy implies a power differential between the dispenser and the recipient of mercy that the Bible didn't necessarily intend. In a modern religious framework, the implication is often that we have offended God through our disobedience and deserve to be punished. So we appeal to God for mercy. Mercy is connected with forgiveness. And so Borg seeks to reclaim the meaning of the ancient word, to reframe it in terms of how God acts, not how we act, by rendering it in English not as mercy, but rather as compassion. From the Latin root that means to feel with. Everything. When we encounter someone who's suffering, our thoughts shouldn't be about mercy and forgiveness. What's wrong with them that needs fixing? What did they do to deserve this? They should be about compassion and care. How can we accompany them and love them in the midst of what they're enduring? 10 approach Jesus on the road seeking healing. Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. They cry, and they are cured. 9 believe they have received all the healing they need and go on their way to rejoin the community that once ostracized them. But 1 remains as an outcast, and in the continuing suffering of his exclusion, he experiences the compassionate presence of Jesus, through whom and with whom he comes to learn that he's part of something bigger than himself. Go and do likewise. Be like Jesus, not like those guys.